Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. Please help. I lose my temper with my three teenage children and I seem to shout all the time. They shout back and we just seem to have constant screaming matches. Where can I get help and learn to control my temper?
I mean, yeah, wow. I mean, you think the terrible twos are bad and then you get hit with the terrible 13s. And if you've got three teenagers at once, I mean, there's a whole lot of hormone-infused tension going on and it's just sounding... And again, I think there's lots of people with this kind of family structure who'd relate to this, that it's almost like there's this hot potato of tension and you just end up tossing it around between you, but somebody's always getting burned. So the tension itself never lowers. It's just passed around to everyone. So, I mean, it seems like an obvious thing to say, and I think this parent knows it, but you joining into the shouting, while understandable, is utterly unhelpful for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Because then you end up feeling guilty and beating yourself up, but there's been no resolution. And actually, resolution skills are part of what we have to teach our children, but particularly our teenagers. I mean, you've got three of them, and really, I have found, you know, especially in my work, and this issue comes up a lot, the reasons that siblings squabble remains the same whether they're 4 or 14. It's just the stuff they're arguing over is different. Instead of it being trucks and Legos, it's lipstick and dresses. And, you know, the kind of themes they fight over are the exact same. I mean, just to kind of put a bit of context on it, teens are flooded with feelings. I mean, that's, you know, they're constantly overwhelmed and they need to get those out safely. Without you entering into it, don't do this, don't do that. They actually have to release that tension, because what's happening is the right side of their brain, which is the emotional center, is taking over, and they've got to process that before you can appeal to that left side of the brain where rational thought and logical thinking is held. Mm-hmm. But they can't do the two at once. So if you take that self-centeredness, entitlement, they're all part of adolescent development, which they are, you'll also see that peer relationships have a huge influence on what's going on at home. So if when your teenagers are squabbling either with each other or with you and you feel yourself getting pulled in, I'm going to say hit your internal pause button. Don't take it personally, even though it may sound incredibly personal in terms of what they say to you. Don't take it personally. Listen carefully to what's being said and how it's being said. Let them just rant and ream it off and reflect something back like, how was your day in school today? How are things with your friends? If peer relationships are going well, we tend to see a correlation that things at home go well. And equally, if peer relationships are not going well, things at home tend to get highly fraught. Because what teenagers still want from their parents is time and attention, which in other words is a connection. But it can be very, very hard to achieve that when you've got this push-pull, push-pull. So think about it. If you can just tolerate letting them let off steam, get this out of their systems, empty out that right side of the brain and reflect back going, it sounds like you've had a really hard day. I wish you didn't have to let me know the way you have, because that some of what you've said is really hurtful to me. Mm. But I do want to help you move past this. Mm. Now, you're going to have to memorize that when you're calm and just like rhyme it off in the moments, because in those heightened moments,
mean it.
Oh, not at all. I mean, okay. You know, fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
But I think you need some kind of mantra in mind that you can default to when the tension is high, because what you otherwise will default to in tension is your own adolescent self. Mm. And I don't know that many of us have a pretty story about our own adolescent selves either.
Yeah.
So it will push your own.
Yeah,
trigger buttons.
I suppose part of the difficulty here, especially with adolescents, is that you'll catch them of a Wednesday morning and you go, God, they're so mature. That's great.
Yeah.
And then they come home 2 hours later and they're this narcissist who just seem completely incapable of seeing anything from anyone else's point of view. And I can really understand this parent's frustration with that, because you just... Will you?
Especially if you've had that good start to the day and you're anticipating, oh, we're having a good day. I'm going to greet them with a big grin and how are you and tell me all about it. And they'll grunt at you or tell you to, you know, sod off and do your own thing, and they'll slam a door and you're going, well, what was that about?
Mm.
But what it was about was that something happened in the day without you there, and it has just turned the whole emotional wheel the other way. So having a teenager can sometimes feel like you've got five different kids in one.
Yeah.
But having three of them is just sometimes a bit like trying to manage a herd mentality. The key is, do not get pulled into the drama. Stay outside of it, but stay interested in it.
Yeah, that's another thing. Can drama be magnified? Oh, is there some sort of algorithm between the amount of teenagers and the amount of drama and how it can be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and again, it's that hot potato mentality that because they're having a drama, it's spilling over. Then you enter the drama and you make it even more dramatized because you're saying, you're not allowed to talk to me like that. Don't speak to me like that. Don't raise your voice at me. Don't. And your teenager's saying, you're just another person having a go at me in my already bad day.
Mm-hmm. God, it's tough.
It is tough. And that's why, you know, embrace the toddlers because this is when it's good.
Yeah. At least you know what screaming means. You
exactly.
Know.
And it will pass. It will pass. That's the important thing. You will come through it. You generally have a rough few years, typically kind of that 13, maybe 14 to 16. And then towards the end of the teenage years, it tends to settle itself down as they're entering young adulthood. Mm. I'm using generalizations like tends to because there will be someone going, that's not true.
That's because, yeah, I think it probably varies from
totally
person to
does.
Person. When being a teenager finishes.
Oh yeah, no, it absolutely does.
And like their mid-20s, for
instance. It also depends on, you know, not so much what's happening, but how what's happening is being dealt with. So there's so many multiple factors, but don't forget the value of a timeout. And when things are getting that hot at home, wrap up, put a scarf on and get outside for a walk and leave them at it.
Any chance you could advise at what age stranger danger should be mentioned? My five-year-old has started playing out in the green and was curious about what age to mention this.
Yep, I'm going to say jump in there as early as you can. I would certainly say from preschool age onwards, you can talk about stranger danger. You can talk about good strangers and bad strangers. I tend to say to parents, don't say all strangers are bad, because sometimes if, you know, unfortunately, if your child gets lost or loses sight of you somewhere, you want them to know they could go up to somebody in a uniform like a guard and ask for help, even if they don't know them. So you want to differentiate between good strangers and bad strangers. You want to talk about this early and often. Teach them basic things like you never take treats from any stranger because good strangers don't offer children they don't know treats.
Yeah.
And it's okay to say no to strangers, particularly if a stranger asks you to help them with something, do something or find something, because adults know if they need help, they can ask other adults. They don't ask children. So you want to just teach stranger danger in terms of no treats, don't help strangers. They can say no to adults if it doesn't feel good for them or feel right for them, they can say no. And teach them things about that they can tell you anything, that, you know, private parts are private. You're putting those boundaries in place from a very young age. So certainly if you haven't had this chat and your child is five, have it now. And anyone who maybe has a younger child, don't be afraid to start this even earlier.
Mm. My nine-month-old daughter hasn't laughed or giggled yet, not as much as a sneer, except for when she poops. We have been assured that all is okay with her and she is perfect, but I would love her to giggle for me. I've been really trying hard to make her laugh and I've tried everything.
Oh, I know. I really feel for this parent because, you know, your child's first smiles, first laughs are just, you know, something really special to hold on to. And I think we can't help but compare our children developmentally to other babies we know, when the reality is all children, all babies are different. If you've been assured that all is okay with her, and I assume you mean by a professional like public health nurse or a pediatrician or a GP rather than family members assuring you, then I would go with that. Because basically, if she is smiling, babbling, generally communicating in the way babies do, she's most likely fine. If you remain very worried over the next few months, certainly consult a pediatrician who could do a developmental check on her. But that's mostly to reassure this parent rather than to say there's something wrong.
Yeah.
We have this thing that, you know, babies must do things at certain stages. And yet around 4 months on average, generally speaking, is when babies do start to laugh, but all babies are different.
Yeah.
So if she's doing the kind of babbly stuff and she's engaging and she's making eye contact with you and things like that, I would go with that and assume she's okay. She may be a more serious, contemplative type of child. Mm. And you may really have to do something very, very funny to get a laugh out of her. She's not giving it away easily. So try not to worry.
Yeah.
But if you are worried and it goes on beyond a year, take her to see somebody.
Right, we do have to take a break after that. A very shy 9-year-old. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Joanna Fortune still with us. Next question is this. I have a 9-year-old girl, eldest of two, who is bright and funny. She's very shy though. She is literally tongue-tied when another adult asks her the simplest of questions. She also says no to new experiences. Some of it is out of laziness, I'm sure, but I reckon a lot of it is fear of being no good at something new and of not getting it right the first time. Sometimes her younger sibling will go ahead and do the activity, and that seems to unlock her. She gets on well at school academically and has a couple of really close friends. Her teacher, who has known her for 2 years, says she is less emotionally mature than her classmates and she cries frequently in class when something is new or difficult. Should I push her to do new things all the time, or can I trust her to find her own level and be happy? I would hate for her to look back and wish she was pushed that bit harder.
Yeah, I mean, it's the plight of the shy child, isn't it, really? I mean, but shyness, I would see shyness anyway as a personality trait, not a flaw. We tend to want to unshy our kids, get them out there, make them confident, make them independent, make them assertive. And there's a lot of benefit for that. But, you know, there's also a lot of benefits to looking at the pros of what her shyness brings. Shy children, they tend to be very attentive listeners, partly because they don't speak so much. They tend to attune and listen. They can have sort of an inner peace that can spread to others so that others feel calm and comfortable in their presence without them needing to say anything. Now, I mean, that's all great. It can be, but shyness can be a help, or it can be a hindrance depending on how it is dealt with and responded to. So a couple of tips I would say for this parent is the more you push, the more she's going to retreat.
Yeah.
So you want to don't go do it and look at your younger brother or sister doing it. Look, they can do it. You can do it. Come on. You don't want to do that. You want to create opportunities, but don't push her. Also, don't try not to label her as shy to others. Oh, it's because she's shy, or she's quiet because she's shy. Don't do that. But also don't put her on the spot to perform or engage if she's showing resistance. You want to acknowledge the difficulty and acknowledge her struggle. I know this is hard for you. I know this is uncomfortable. I wonder what would make it a bit easier just to try it. How about giving it a go for 5-10 minutes, and then you can come back to me if it doesn't feel right. So you want to acknowledge that, so she feels felt by you, that you get it for her. Some children would have more than shyness, I think, and just reading some of the points in this letter, that she might be hiding behind shyness rather than showing other feelings that are difficult or more complex for her. Fear may be making her avoid trying things. So it's easier to say I'm shy than I'm afraid, in case I get it wrong. So broadly speaking, I'm going to say encourage risk, you know, encourage her to try new things, but don't force it, but create opportunities for her to practice independence at home. And with young children at home, that starts with giving them chores to do, developmentally appropriate chores. Praise her effort over outcome. So if it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter, particularly if you think she's afraid to try new things in case she's not good at it. So really focus your praise specifically on how hard she's trying, that she really gave it a good go, that she focused in on whatever it is, and try to do it that way. I would be teaching and practicing social scripts with her as well. So role play, basically role play this at home. Let's imagine we're going somewhere new and you're trying something, or let's imagine a stranger asks you something, or you have to go to a counter and say what you want. Role play it at home. So the first time she's doing it isn't when she is aroused by fear or anxiety. Those kinds of things should help, but otherwise accept that she's shy and it's part of who she is.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it at all. No, not at all. No matter what I try, our 6-year-old continues to wet himself. During the day, he wears underwear, and at night I have him in pull-ups. I have been trying to sort the problem out for months, bringing him to various doctors who tell me he will eventually learn. I want him to be toilet trained soon before his peers find out and he is slagged.
Yeah, I mean, the wetting or soiling are always very complex symptoms when they're presenting, because it's something you can't force a child. They have to enter into it with you. They have to, you know, control their own bladder themselves. Now, he's 6 and you say you've been working on this for months. So I suppose that brings up a question for me. Was he previously dry and has become a wetter? That's what I'm not sure, because they would require different responses. So, you know, if he has been previously dry and has become a wetter, you're looking at regression in potty training rather than never having achieved it. So look at what was going on in the last few months, what might be a trigger for this regression. If it's that he has never achieved dryness, then you're going to have to, it's almost like you're starting over. like you're starting potty training from scratch with him. You can do all kinds of things. Question first, is he what I'd call one of those very busy, distracted children, you know, where they're so consumed and with what they're engaged in that they're not listening to their body cues, hunger, full, needing to go to the toilet. They're just not tuned in. Is there a pattern? Is there a time of day or night when this is more of an issue? Can he control his bladder for periods of time during the day? And what's different about those times compared to others? It's almost like you're doing an investigative piece.
Because it seems like he must. If he's six, he's in junior infants at the very least.
Yes.
So he, if he's wetting himself during the day, that would have been noticed at the school.
Definitely, it would have been noticed. So it is sounding like it, and it can take children a lot longer to achieve dryness at night than compared to during the day.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure where this is the biggest issue, but it can take some children until they're 7 years old. So I imagine that's why a lot of the doctors you've seen are saying, look, it'll work out. It'll work out, because they tend to not treat this as a huge issue until the child is over seven. And then if it's still an issue, they'll look into it. I'm always a fan of ruling out medical symptoms, but you have gone down that road already. So I'm going to say involve him in the cleanup. You're not going to shame him for wetting himself, of course, but he's 6 years old. So if he wets himself, you can bring him to the bathroom. He can take his clothes off. He can put them into the washing machine. You put it on. He can empty the machine and come with you to hang those clothes up. So he's part of that process.
Yeah.
And that's just going to make him more cognizant and aware of what's happening. You want to sit down with him. Again, you're not shaming or embarrassing him, but say, this is something, now that you're six, we really want to work on. So let's make a plan together and involve him in that. What would help? There's all kinds of things. You can buy these little devices that you strap to children's wrists. They look like watches, and you program them to vibrate at set periods, or, you know, intervals, so maybe every 30 minutes. And then you tell him that every time it vibrates, he goes to the toilet, whether he thinks he needs to or not.
Yeah.
A big challenge for most busy, active young children is they don't sit on the toilet long enough to fully empty their bladders. So they tend to wet from residual urine. So again, encourage him to, when he gets off the toilet, stand up and count to five and then sit back down. Mm-hmm. And see, is there more to come?
Yeah.
So you want to make quite a cognitive plan with him around this, but I'd involve him in it at the age of six and just tell him it's something you're going to work on together, because you want to help him grow up and be a big boy.
Now, a more grown up, but still a child nonetheless, my son doesn't want to do anything for his 21st birthday. He's generally quite outgoing and sociable, but says he doesn't want a party or a night out. He has friends, but doesn't want to invite them to anything. I said, fine, let's just do a family thing. And he completely ruled that out too. He's being very stubborn about it, and I can't understand it. Why wouldn't he want a party? It might seem like a small issue, but it's just so unusual for him not to want to socialise. Please advise what to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's 21, he's an adult, and being social does not mean you enjoy hosting a party.
Mm.
You know, going to parties as a guest, there's no pressure on you. You just, your only role there is to go have a good time. And if you're not having a good time, go home.
Yeah.
But if you're hosting a party, it is beholden on you that others have a good time, or you certainly will feel that pressure. So he may simply just not want to host a party. There's a little bit in this letter that makes me wonder, though, it's so unusual for him. Is this parent really worried that something else is going on? So, you know, have a little reflect on if there is anything else. Is it just about the party, or is the party part of a pattern you've noticed that socially his engagement has changed? And maybe talk to him about that. But otherwise, I'm going to say you have to respect his wishes. You cannot force a 21-year-old to have a party if he doesn't want to, or even to have an event at home. He may not want that level of focus or attention on himself. But I can appreciate, as a parent, your child turning 21 is not only a milestone for them, it's a milestone for you.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too.
Yeah, I feel that.
Who wants the party here?
And I think, you know, you got him there. You know, he's 21. Mm. You want to go, good job, me as well. So let him know that. Let him know that him turning 21 is a milestone for you.
Mm.
And you realize you're asking him to do something, and it's as much for you as him. But could he meet you somewhere that you could mark the occasion because you want to? If he says no, he says no, by the way. But if he would agree to a dinner with literally, I don't mean a big, all the grannies and aunties there, but just the immediate family, in a restaurant of his choice, or at home with you guys with a takeout of his choice, just to mark the occasion, because I do think, as a parent, that's something you want to mark. I often think children's birthdays are more about us parents than the child.
And especially for a 21st, I kind of get the sense oftentimes that, in the run-up to a 21st, the person's been, what are you doing for your 21st? What are you doing for your 21st? And it has to be this fabulous night, and it's compared to other people's fabulous nights, and
understand why he might not want one.
Yeah.
And particularly if he's gone to loads and loads of them and he's like, oh, they're done, you know.
Yeah.
No one wants to go to another one of those.
On the subject of stranger danger, one texter says, my 2.5-year-old ran away from me in the supermarket and went hiding. Mm-hmm. I will never forget the absolute fear I felt as I tried desperately to find her. I've had many chats with my daughter about stranger danger since then, and that's not a unique experience,
I don't think. No, and you're a cold sweat.
Dave says, when I was 3, my mom lost me when we were out. She had 5 of us under 6 at the time. I was brought to the police station. I wouldn't tell the police my name because mom had told me not to talk to strangers. At 3 years of age, you don't remember much, but I do remember them all falling around the place laughing. I eventually told them my name after some ice cream, says Dave, who cracked as soon as they produced a bribe. And Peter says, my 10-year-old is similar. Now, this is on the 9-month-old who isn't giggling yet.
Yeah.
I'm putting it down to a very refined sense of humour.
Yeah.
So my fart noises and belly raspberries are not to her liking. However, the dog is the funniest thing she's ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, all she does is wag his tail. I don't pretend to understand her, says Peter. Well, that'll probably continue through the rest of your life, Peter. Joanna, thanks a million. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.